down there and communicate.
Yeah.
Next time I'll get up early.
Yeah, I feel very safe.
All right, well, say good morning. So first of all, I want to thank Hal Kane for providing the breakfast this morning. I actually call out Hal. Thank you very much. Yes, Baruch Hashem. Yeah. Thank God. Hal will tell you all about the incredible Hashgacha practice that led to the Entenmann's giant having a sale and Hal walking in at the right time. Mamish. So he'll tell you it's gonna be chapter 22 in his autobiography. So you can hear it now or you can. And also, of course, to thank Ari for the coffee, as usual, and to thank all of you for coming. All right, so let's begin. We're going to start at the top of Daf Lamed Hey Amud Aleph. So both sides, just to reorient ourselves a little bit. Remember, we're talking about the Mishnah. And in the Mishnah, we had an interesting discussion between Rabbi Eliezer and the Chachamim, bless you, about the following case. I'll just read to you the first line. Od Am Rabbi Eliezer, Omeid Adam Ala Muktza, Erev Shabbos B'Shvi'is V'Omer Mikran Ani Ochel L'Machos. Remember, we're dealing with the case over here of where a person is standing Erev Shabbos by the Muktzah. Remember, the Muktzah represents this area where people would go ahead. Muktzah can mean many different things. It can mean storage. In this particular context, what it actually means is a place where people would leave their fruit. They would spread their fruit out to dry. So a person stands by the Muktzah Erev Shabbos Shvi'is. And he says, Mikan ani ochel amacher. From here I'm going to eat tomorrow. Now, of course, the novelty over here, so far that we've seen from this Mishnah, obviously we've seen in the Mishnah from the Gemara, is that this is Davka talking about a case during a Shemitah year. Why during a Shemitah year? Because there are no obligations for Trumas and Maestros during a Shemitah year. Therefore, again, according to Rabbi Eliezer, as long as you go ahead and designate which particular, I should say, as long as you make a general statement that you're going to eat from this fruit, even though you do not delineate or demarcate which specific fruits you're going to eat from, then lemaisa, again, you're permitted to partake of that on Yom Tov. The novelty, of course, is that one might have thought that since these fruits are being spread out to dry, therefore a person does not have intent to be able to eat them, and therefore they should be actually mukta on Yom Tov. Kamash Rabbi Eliezer says, as long as on Erev Shabbos, you go ahead and stand up there and say, I'm going to eat from here, you just make that verbal declaration, you're permitted to partake of it. The Chacham, on the other hand, disagree, and they say a simple verbal declaration is not enough. Rather, one must actively delineate or demarcate from which fruits one is actively going to partake. So top of Lamed Hey. V'halo, Mosaru Choser. And I will say, at this point in time, what the Gemara is assuming is fine. Remember, without going through the whole Shak Levitarian Amud Beis, but the assumption the Gemara left off with was that when you declare an item as food, as ready for consumption, it becomes Chayiv in Maestros, even if what? Even if it's not fully processed. Meaning, here, let's go with what everybody agrees with. Actually, there's only one thing everybody agrees with, which is that, actually, not even that. So there's a part of a detail everybody agrees with, which is that when a food is fully processed, that's when it becomes subject to the laws of Trumas and Maestros. The Shaila is, you know, does it also have to be brought to Siri Espinay Abayis? But let's leave that out for a moment. Let's just assume now everyone agrees that when it's fully processed, it's Chayvet Trumas and Maestros. The concept that the Gemara advanced on Amud Beis is that maybe even before it's fully processed, if you declare that you are going to eat from this, that makes it essentially what? A finished product, and therefore again it becomes Chayim Shumas and Maestros. That's the Gemara is assuming right now. So the Gemara questions that. V'halo, Mosar Chozer. But isn't this case in the Mishnah a case of returning the leftover things? Now we'll see this case in just a moment. V'shamim le Rabbi Eliezer. We learned from Rabbi Eliezer. The Amar Kol Heichad de Mosar Chozer Lo Kava. Rabbi Eliezer holds that any time that you're partaking of a food and you have the ability to go ahead and return that which is left over to the pile of produce, that means that the object is not yet finished and not yet in a fully processed state, and therefore not subject to Trumas and Maestros. This nun, where do we see this? Hanotel zesim min amatan. If somebody takes olives from a vat, tova achas achas b'melach v'ochav. Now, mostly the other part is, remember, when you have unprocessed produce, what are you permitted to do? You're permitted to eat achilas aray. You can have what we call a snack, but you may not eat achilas keva. You may not eat a full meal, even though what? Now, again, when we say you can't eat a full meal, meaning you can eat a full meal, you just have to what? You have to take trumas and maestros. So what the Gemara is saying over here, the Mishnah is saying over here is the following. A person could take out one olive at a time, dip it in salt, and that's fine. You could do that even though the vat of olives is not, remember, the assumption is olives are sitting in a vat for what reason? You should know this from your olive crushing days, right? So the idea is that the olives actually become soft within the vat. Apparently the olives themselves just generate the heat. Keeping them together in a confined space causes them to soften and allow the oil, first of all, to begin to ooze out, and also to make them a little bit more ra'oi for crushing. So the idea over here is the olives are in the vat, therefore they're not fully processed, they're not fully finished, therefore they have not yet been tied. So therefore the Mishnah says you can go ahead and take out the olives one by one and dip them in salt. However, what happens if you took out 10 olives, dip them in salt and put them in front of you? Then in that case, what? In that case, chayiv. In that case, you are obligated to tithe the olives. Why? Look at Rashi. So Rashi says, Tova achas achas b'melech. Okay, we could learn that Rashi. Tova achas achas melech b'ochel. Below meiser. Below mina tivulon b'melech mashu lekeva. Hoav achas achas ochel miyad. So even though, again, we don't say the dipping of salt renders, shows that the olives in general are a finished product. Therefore, again, if you're eating them one by one, so you don't have to take any trumas and meisers. You're going at eating 10. That's already achilas keva. Therefore, you'd have to tithe the olives. Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Eliezer says it depends. Min ha-ma'atan tahor chayif. If you are removing the olives from a vat that is tahor, meaning that the olives in the vat are being prepared in a state of ritual purity, then you are obligated to go ahead and tithe. Look at Rashi. Min ha-ma'atan tahor chayif la'aser. Well, actually, I'm not going to read the rest of Rashi because it'll spoil the end. So Rabbi Lev says like this: if you're taking from a vat that is ritually pure, meaning the olives in the vat are being prepared in a state of ritual purity, then you're chayv for chumas and maestros. However, mina ma'atan tamei potur. But if you're taking it from a vat that is ritually impure, then lemaisa you don't have to tithe. Why? Because you are able to return the leftovers. We ask about this. What's happening over here? What does this mean? If the vat is tar, then you have to tithe. If the vat is not tar, then you don't. What's the pshat? Oh, I'll tell you why. Rabbi Yavo explains the following. The first case of the Mishnah is dealing with the case of where the vat is tar, which means the olives are being prepared in a state of ritual purity, but the individual is tame. The individual is tamei. Therefore, what does that mean, Rabosai? Delo matzi mehadir lei. Now, Rabosai, remember, this is commenting on the case of the 10 olives. You see, everyone agrees with what? Let's go there. Everybody agrees with. Everybody agrees with which case?
One olive
at a time. So everyone agrees one olive at a time. That's achilas keva. That's achilas keva. And so for... Excuse me, Arai, thank you. Achilas Arai. Achilas, it's the antonyms, they confuse me, they just throw off everything, right? So what happens? So now if it's achilas, if it's one at a time, everyone agrees it's achilas arai, and if it's achilas arai, no chai, no chiyah for trumas and maestros. What Rabbi Avo is making a distinction is in the case of asora. So Rabbi Avo wanted to say the case of asora also has two subdivisions. If it's coming from a tahor vat, then you have to take trumas and maestros. If it's coming from a tamei vat, you don't have to take trumas and maestros. What's the difference? Rabbi Avoh now explains that the first case is a case where the vat is ritually pure and the individual is tamei. Therefore, what? Delo matzi mahadim. Delo matzi mahadim means what? Rabbi say whatever he takes out, whatever. Let's say it turns out I take out 10, but I only eat one, and I say after one I'm full. So what's the halacha now? I can't return those back to the vat. Why can't I return them back to the vat? Because by definition, since I've had them, now they're tameh. And therefore, again, the maisa, they can't go back into the vat that's being prepared in ritual purity. Seifa, b'ma'atan tameh, the gavra tameh. Whereas the seifa is dealing with the case of what? Where the vat is tameh and the individual is tameh. And therefore, what? D'matzi mi'hadrileh. And therefore, what? Halacha l'maisa, whatever is left over, I can what? I can go ahead and return. And therefore, what you see Rabbi Eliezer saying over here is what? Rabbi Eliezer saying is like this. If you're taking from a tahar vat, therefore, when you take out 10, it's achilas keva. And it's achilas keva even when? Even if you don't end up eating all 10. However, if it's from a ma'atan tame, if the olives are ritually impure, so to speak, and also really, ritually impure just means that a person is not makbid on preparing it patara. It doesn't have to actively mean impure. Lamai said that gives me the license that I have reserved the right to return back anything I don't eat, which by definition means it may not be an achilas keva, in which case it does not automatically require me to go in and take trumas and maestros. So why is this important for us? Masnisin nami, because perhaps our Mishnah also reflects a case of what? The muktze tahor, where the fruit that's being dried out, is being spread out to dry, is being prepared in a state of ritual purity. the gavra tameh and the individual is tameh, and therefore delo matzi mehadole, he would not be able to return anything that which he takes. So therefore, and therefore, what Rabbi say, and therefore lemaisa, that's why halacha lemaisa, whatever he takes, by definition, would technically be subject to tithing. The only reason in the Mishnah it's not subject to tithing is why? Is why? Because it's a Shemitah year. Remember, we'll say part of also what we're trying to figure out is why do you have to arrange this case in the case of a Shemitah year? So now we're beginning to game to make sense. Because according to Rabbi Eliezer, if you were to go ahead, if you have something that's tummy, let's assume for a moment, or say it differently. If you have fruits that are being spread out to dry and they're being prepared in a state of ritual purity, and I happen to be an individual who's tummy, and I take some of them to go ahead and eat, according to Rabbi Eliezer, once you take whatever the significant amount would be by fruit, by olives it's 10, whatever the significant amount by fruit would be, by definition there would be chiv and meiser. Why? Because according to Rabbi Eliezer, once you can't return it back to the original pile, therefore by definition that becomes achilas keva, assuming you're taking out the requisite amount, and be chiv and shumas and meisers. The only reason why you can get away with this in the case of Mishnah is because it's a Shemitah year, and there is no chiv for shumas and meisers. To which the Gemara says, but one second, v'halo mukhzar v'omdenhein. You can't make that comparison from the case of the olives, from the vat of olives to our Mishnah. Why? Because we'll say, in our Mishnah, where is the fruit? The fruit is still in the pile. The fruit has never, remember, the Mishnah is dealing with a case of not where fruit has been removed. Dafka, the case of the Mishnah, is dealing with a situation of where the fruit remains with the pile being spread out wherever it is, in the roof and the mukza, to go ahead and dry. Therefore, Lashon of the Gemara is, it's as if the fruit have already been returned, which is another way of saying, you can't compare the olive case to this case, because in the case of the olive, you've actively removed olives from the vat. In this case over here, all of the fruit still remains together. Ella, Rabbi, we have this headline. Now, we'll say, now the Gemara is going to go back and expound on a position of Marzutra. So if you remember again, Marzutra was the last it's about four lines up from Amud Beis, about 11 lines up from the end of the page. Marzutra wanted to advance the following idea. Marzutra wanted to say that Shabbos Kavah, that Shabbos by definition, because there's a din of Achila on Shabbos, it's covered Shabbos, Onik Shabbos, person's also have a Suda, anything you eat on Shabbos is what? Yeah. Is Achilas Keva. And therefore would be technically Chayiv in Shumas and Maestros, except the only reason the Mishnah why we can get away with this is why? Again, it's a Shemitah year. So now the Gemara is going to go back and reflect on Marzotra. Ella, Amr of Simbar Ashim, Rabbi Elazar Amrit, are you reflecting on the view of Rabbi Eliezer? Rabbi Eliezer Latame, Rabbi Eliezer goes according to his already established reasoning, because what did Rabbi Eliezer say? Rabbi Eliezer said, the Amar Truma Kava, the Kol Shekin Shabbos. But Rabbi Eliezer holds that, you know, interestingly enough, you can technically separate out Truma. You could separate out Truma even before an item is a fully finished product. So Rabbi Eliezer says that Truma, if you look at Rashi, it's the first of the intermediate wide lines in Rashi. Rabbi Eliezer, L'tamei Damer Truma Kovas, Damer Shlo Nigmar Malachto, Shemik Bia Trumaso, Ne'eser Achilas Arai, At Shifra Shamaisa. So Rabbi Eliezer is of the opinion that if you were to go ahead and separate out Truma from unfinished produce, once you separate out Truma, what that essentially does is what? It triggers the obligation for all of the other tithes. So Rabbi Eliezer holds that once you separate, and again, this is even an remember, once the produce becomes fully processed, then what? Then it's chayiv. Then it's chayiv in everything. The chiddush over here, so Rabbi Eliezer, is if I separated out Truma from unfinished produce, the separation of Truma triggers the obligation to separate out everything else. So the Gemara suggests over here, Rabbi Eliezer holds that Truma kava the Kol Shekin Shabbos. And if Truma is going to go ahead and trigger the obligation to separate out the rest of the tithes, then what? Certainly when Shabbos comes, Shabbos triggers the obligation to separate out all of the tithes as well. Look at Rashi. The Kol Shekin Shabbos, D'chashiva Achilasa. As remember, as we said before, that because every act of eating is significant on Shabbos, therefore, if you partake of this produce on Shabbos, by definition, you would be chayiv to go ahead and separate out Trumas and Maisros. Rashi says, "Dechashiva achilasa, aval rabbanon imulacha kihechi depligi b'truma pligi b'shabbos." So we'll say, now what the Gemara is suggesting over here, Rashi is suggesting over here, is that the rabbanon disagree on this point with Rabbi Eliezer, and the rabbanon say the same way that the separation of Truma from unfinished produce
does not trigger the obligation to separate out all of the other tithes, so too Shabbos, consumption of unfinished produce on Shabbos, does not immediately trigger an obligation for tithing. So the Gemara says, this none. Again, right now we're not worrying about the Chacham, we're about Rabbi Eliezer. So now what the Gemara is suggesting over here, Rav Simon bar Ashi is coming along and saying that we commented on Mar Zutra. Mar Zutra said Shabbos Kava, and comes on Rav Simon bar Ashi and comes to say, oh, Rabbi Eliezer would seem to subscribe to that same view, that normally if you partake of unfinished produce on Shabbos, the any act of consumption on Shabbos is significant. And therefore, even when you partake of unfinished produce on Shabbos, what's the halacha? What's the halacha? You must take chumos and maestros. You must take chumos and maestros. And Rabosa, again, coming full circle, that's right. But Ezra sets up this case in the Mukta as what? As a Shemitah year, where there's no obligation of chumos and maestros. So the Gemara says, this none. Peros, shet tarman, achal nigmur malachton. If you take truma from unfinished produce, Rabbi Eliezer, oser le'echol mehen aray. Rabbi Eliezer says, you may no longer eat achilas aray from them until when? And you can no longer eat a snack until you take full trumas, full maestros. The Chachamim matirim, and the Chachamim go ahead and permit this, because apparently the Chachamim feel that the act of taking truma does not immediately trigger the obligation to take all other tithes, since the produce itself is still unfinished. So Tashma Misefa, but look at the end. The Chachamim say, look, this is the end of our Mishnah. The Chachamim say, Ad Shiyir Shom V'Yomer Mikan V'Ad Kan. The Chachamim say that should only that when can you go, when does the case of the Mishnah work? When you set aside produce on Erev Shabbos, only if you actively demarcate which fruit you're actively going to partake of. So the Gemara says, Taima de Erev Shabbos b'Shviyas de'la barisurehu. So the reason this works is because this is an Erev Shabbos during Shemitah year where there is no obligation in Maaser. Ha b'shar shani shavua. But yet it would appear, even according to the Chachamim, that if you were to try this process during any other year, during Erev Shabbos and any other year, where there is an obligation to tithe, that this would not work. My time, why is that? Lav mishum de Shabbos kava. It must be because what? The Chachamim also agree with Rabbi Eliezer, that's what Tavos say, that Shabbos itself establishes an obligation for tithing. Because since every act of consumption on Shabbos is significant, even though the produce is unfinished, if you eat it, it's significant, and therefore you must tithe. So the Gemara is suggesting over here that the Chachamim would agree with Rabbi Eliezer on this point. The Gemara says, I'm sorry. My time, lo, shiny hasam, kevan da'amar mikan ba'at kan ani ochel machar. Gemara says, no, it's different in this case. Why? Because since a person is saying, from here to here, I'm going to eat tomorrow, Kabbalah, that by definition, that act of going ahead and actively describing, actively demarcating what unfinished produce I'm going to eat from tomorrow, that by definition is koveya. That by definition creates a kvius, and that's what triggers the tithing obligation, which the only reason it doesn't apply in Mishnah, again, is because it's a Shemitah year. Iyachi, if that's the case, my area Shabbos. So why do you have to illustrate this in a case of Shabbos? It doesn't have to be Shabbos. Afilu b'chol nami. Right, Rabbi say, again, the truth is, if really the idea that the Mishnah is coming to teach me is that according to the Chachamim, when you go ahead and what? When you go ahead and you actively demarcate an area of unfinished produce of which you are going to partake the next day, l'maisa, again, that triggers an tithing obligation. You could illustrate that case even not on Erev Shabbos. You could illustrate that case just on a regular weekday. Why are you illustrating it on Shabbos? Oh, I'll tell you why. Ha kamash molon de tevel muchon hu etzel Shabbos. It's to teach us, Rabbi Osai, that tevel, that untithed produce, is considered to be muchon, is considered to be prepared, technically usable on Shabbos. Shim avar v'tikno matukon. That, Rabbi Osai, we will learn later on, that as much as you are not supposed to take trumas and maestros on Shabbos, if you did, the tithing actually works, and the produce actually becomes usable. Or many, I think Mary Zakasha is an interesting case. If a person was eating a cluster of grapes and you walked in from your garden to your chatzin, I will say, remember, one of the other issues by produce is produce only becomes chayiv in tithing when there's ri'iyas p'nei habayis. It has to literally come into your home. Now, interim doesn't literally mean interim. Interim means your chatzar. So I'm snacking on a cluster of grapes in my gina, my garden, which is outside of my courtyard. No problem. Why? Because it has not yet come into my courtyard. Therefore, there's no obligation for tithing. And as I'm eating these grapes, I enter in to my courtyard. So now there's been what's called the Re'ias Pnei HaBayis. It's seeing the face of my home, which would seem to trigger a tithing obligation. So listen to this. Rabbi Eliezer Omer Yigmar. Rabbi Eliezer says you can finish up the grapes. Rabbi Yeshua Omer Lo Yigmar. Rabbi Yeshua says you may not finish the grapes. Chashcha B'Leil Shabbos. Rabbi says similarly again, I'm eating Friday afternoon, same cluster of grapes. I'm eating cluster. So first of all, look at Rashi for just a moment. Rashi says over here, Rabbi Eliezer Omer Yigmar. Imratza Ligmar B'Chatzer Yigmar Achila. So De'ein Chatzer, De'ein Chatzer Kovas Tavash Lilo Nigmar Malach. And Rabbi said the assumption over here is we're dealing with not fully processed grapes. And therefore, the Maisa, again, the act of bringing it to the Chatzar does not establish an obligation for Maisa, just according to Rabbi Eliezer. So now, second case, it's Erev Shabbos. I'm eating my grapes, and now it gets dark, i.e. Shabbos starts. So what's the halacha? Rabbi Eliezer or Yigmar? Rabbi Eliezer's Abosai, and again, the assumption over here is, what am I dealing with? I'm dealing with unfinished produce, not fully processed produce. So what happens now at Shabbos? Rabbi Eliezer says I can finish it. Rabbi Yeshua says lo Yigmar. Rabbi Yeshua says I can't finish it. So the Gemara says, what's going on over here? So first of all, it's like this would seem to be a contradiction in the Leila Shabbos case. Because we just got finished saying, what does Rabbi Eliezer hold? What does he hold? Shabbos Kovas. That by definition, any act of consumption on Shabbos is significant. And therefore, any act of consumption on Shabbos would trigger a tithing obligation. A tithing obligation, which would then, and now what do we see over in the Braisa? That according to Blazer, I'm munching on the cluster of grapes. I would have thought that according to Blazer, what should happen once Shabbos starts? You should have to stop, right? Stop. You can't eat anymore until you tithe it. But yet Blazer says you can keep on eating. To which the Gemara says, no. Hasam kidik tani taima. Rabbi Nassim, no. You have to understand the Braisa a little bit differently. How does the Braisa read? What Rabbi Nassim says, lo kishomer Blazer yigmar b'chatzer yigmar. Rabbi Eliezer, when it says that Rabbi Eliezer says that if you have the food in the chatzar, when you bring the food in the chatzar, yigmar, it doesn't mean you should finish eating. Rather, what does it mean? It means ela yotzei chutz lechatzar the yigmar. What Rabbi Eliezer means when he says it's finish is what? Go out of the chatzar and finish. Finish it up outside and then go into the chatzar. Below kishom Rabbi Eliezer yigmar b'Shabbos yigmar, and similarly when Rabbi Eliezer says that when Shabbos comes you should finish, it doesn't mean finish on Shabbos. Rather, elamantin lemotzai Shabbos yigmar. Rather, what does Rabbi Eliezer mean? Right, when should you finish it? Wait, stop eating now and finish it on Motzei Shabbos. Okay, so therefore, also according to that interpretation, Rabbi Eliezer is not contradicting himself. Ki aser Rabin am Rabbi Yochanan. And also when Rabin came to Rabbi Yochanan the following idea. Echad Shabbos, ve'echad Shuma, ve'echad Chatzar, ve'echad Nekach, kulan ein koven ella b'darish nigmar melachta. So Moshe comes along, Rav in the name of Rabbi Yochanan, and says, Shabbos, Truma, Chatzar, Mekach is purchasing, all of these items do not establish a tithing obligation unless, of course, what? Unless, of course, the produce is fully processed. So what are each of these cases? Shabbos, the case of Shabbos, La'afuke midi Hillel comes to exclude the position of Hillel. Because what did Hillel say? Tisanya hama amer perosi makom lemakom liktzar. If a person was gathering fruit to move it from one place to another in order for it to dry out, v'kidesh alei mayom, and now it became Shabbos, amr Rabbi Yehuda Hillel la'atzmo oser. Hillel prohibited these fruits for himself. You know, we'll say Hillel held, like was supposedly the position of Rabbi Eliezer, that Shabbos Kovas, that Shabbos by definition creates a kavius, and therefore even if you eat from fruit that's not fully processed on Shabbos, you are chayiv to go ahead and tithe it, because every act of consumption on Shabbos is significant. And then again, even achilas araya on Shabbos can't be done without shumas and maestros. This was Hillel's position. Kamashmalan, we don't hold of that. Kamashmalan, that for our purposes, Shabbos is not kovas for an achilas aray. Amud beis, chotzer. What's the case of Chatzar? La'afukim with Rabbi Yaakov, to exclude the position of Rabbi Yaakov. What Rabbi Yaakov say? This time, hama'avir te'inim b'chatzera liktzos. If a person is going ahead and spreading out figs in his Chatzar to dry out, banov u'bnei beiso ochlin mehen aray, his members of his family could eat, could have a snack from it, u'petura min ha'maiser, and it's exempt from maiser. Then Rabbi say, the chiddush over here is what? Even though, where is this fruit? Where is this fruit? It's in my Chatzar. Kamash bolan, that chatzar only creates a tithing obligation when? When the fruit is fully processed, when it's fully ready. So therefore, again, my family could go out and snack from it, no problem. V'tani Allah, Rabbi Yaakov Mechayiv. And we learned about, when we stated about this, Rabbi Yaakov said, no, you have to tie the produce since it's already in your chatzar. Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda Poter, and Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda Pater. So therefore, again, Halacha L'maaseh, we reject the position of Rabbi Yaakov, and we do not say that the chatzar is kova'as for produce that is not yet processed. Next case, Truma. What's the case of Truma? So he says, La'afuki mid Rabbi Eliezer. This comes to exclude the position of Rabbi Eliezer. What does Rabbi Eliezer say? This nan, Peros Shatarman, Achol Nigmar Malach. So we'll say, we read this before. If, let's say, you end up separating Truma from produce that is not fully processed. So again, I jumped the gun a little bit. I separated my Truma early. So what does that do to the rest of the produce? So Truma, Shatarman, Achol Nigmar Malach, Rabbi Eliezer, Oser Lechomehen, Arai. So Rabbi Eliezer says, once you have separated Truma, then what Rabbi say? That triggers the obligation for all other tithing, and therefore, you may not eat anything else, even on Achilas Harai, until when? Until you go ahead and you take Maaser. Or it's right, until you take the rest of the Maasers. The Chachamim Matir, and the Chachamim say, no, it's not true. The separating of the Truma does not trigger the obligation for the rest of the tithing. So Rabbi say, therefore, the Gemara is telling us over here, we do not paskin like Rabbi Eliezer. We paskin like the Chachamim, and therefore, even if one goes ahead and separates Truma from produce that's not fully processed, that does not trigger the obligation for the rest of the tithes, and you may still partake of that produce in an Achilas Arai fashion. Next case, Mekach. What's the case of the purchase? Kedisnan. Halo Keach Teiname Ama Oretz. So, this is an interesting case. I purchased figs from an Ama Oretz. We'll say Amma Aris just as an assumption, a person just ignorant. A person doesn't know the halachas. So what happens? B'makom shirov b'nei adam darsin, in a place where the majority of figs are prepared. If you look at Rashi, b'makom alokeach te'enim amaris b'makom shirov b'nei adam darsin, shirov b'nei hamakom osin te'enim kitzios. They take their figs and they make it into literally rings. The darsim osa ba'agulin. And they would press it then into cakes. Havalu stam te'inim darshal nimar malachta. So we'll say, listen to this. So if it's a place where normally the way figs are used is they're made into circles, they're made into rings, and then they're pressed into figs. Remember, it's interesting. We've seen this before. Apparently, the way people used to really prepare figs is you'd press them into a cake. So you'd go to the marketplace, and you wouldn't buy like five figs. What you would do is they would manage to press it into a cake, and the merchant would cut you off a piece of the cake. That's how you would, it's like a fig cake. Right, I think, okay, good. That Hal's going to bring that next to me. So what happens? So we'll say, listen to this. So now, why is this important? Because if that's the way figs are normally prepared, that means that stem figs that are spread out to dry are considered to be unfinished produce. Because again, remember, if it's a place where normally the figs are pressed into cake, then lemaisa, again, the figs that are spread out are unfinished produce. So what happens? Ocha mehen arai. I can go and eat from them achilas arai, uma asron dimai, and essentially I go ahead and I treat them as dimai. Now I will say, what does this mean? Take a look at Rashi. So Rashi says, "Over maasron dimai, kishe bala asron." When you're ultimately going to tie these figs, maasron dimai, you tie them as you would tie dimai. Kedin kala lochem me'ama aret she'in tzarach lahafish truma de lo chashidi ala. So listen to this. So now, again, if I'm purchasing figs in a place where normally figs are made into rings and then pressed into cakes, and what kind of figs am I purchasing? I'm purchasing loose figs. So there are two things I could assume. Number one, halacha lemaisa, so I could eat from them, achilas arai, right? Because again, they're not finished produce, and therefore, because they're not fully processed, I'm permitted to have a snack without first tithing it. And not only that, when I do tithe them, I tithe them as I normally would tithe dimai. They will say, what's dimai? Dimai is produce that is purchased from an ama aretz. So the issue is that we're concerned about what an Ama Aretz does or doesn't do. And there's a general concern that an Ama Aretz is not properly tied this produce. So therefore, again, when I purchase an Ama Aretz, I have to retie that produce with one exception. One exception, Truma. The assumption is that an Ama Aretz, even an Ama Aretz, separates out Truma. Therefore, the incredible novelty over here. When I go ahead and I purchase these figs from an Ama Aretz, So number one, I can eat from them achilas, right? Because it's not fully processed. But not only that, when I tithe them, I don't have to tithe truma. Why? Because what could I assume? I could assume that the Ama Aretz separated truma. I'll say, what's the novelty in that? The novelty in that is that it's unfinished produce. I might have thought that lemais, again, more than do most people tithe their produce, only when it's finished. Kamash Malon, in this case, it was common for people to go ahead and remove truma, even from unfinished produce. And therefore, when I buy these loose figs, two kulos. Number one, I can eat them loose because I can eat them as a snack, achila sarai, because they're not yet finished. And number two, even though they're not finished, I could still assume that the Ama Aretz separated out truma from it. And therefore, lemaisa, when I go ahead and I'm ready to tithe it, I just take all the other tithes other than truma. So the Gemara says, Shmami na tlos. There are three things we learn from this. Number one, Shmami na mekach eno kavas. Elo b'dav shen ramalach. I'll say, lesson number one is that the act of purchasing an item does not automatically create a kvius. That the act of purchase, I might have thought when you buy something, that renders it like a finished product. Kamash Mola, no. Even when you purchase something, if it's not yet fully processed, it retains its identity as a not yet fully processed item of produce. And therefore, again, I'm permitted to sell snack from it. Number two, Shmamina, Rov Amea Aretz Ma'asrenei. Number two, what do we assume about saying? The majority of Amaratz may not take all the tithes, but what? They're careful with the big ones, right? Or the big one. And the big one ultimately is Truma. Number three, Ushmamina, Ma'asrin Dmai Me'ama Aretz, Afilu B'davar Shalom Ne'gmara Melachto. And number three novelty is that we go ahead and when we purchase unfinished produce from an Ama Aretz, I tithe it as I would normally tithe Dmai, even though what? The item that I purchase is not yet a fully processed item. Okay, so Mar says, Ula Fuke, this comes to exclude the following position. If someone goes ahead and exchanges fruits with his friends, Rabosai, this is not a case of purchase. This is a case of barter. But Rabosai, again, the truth is, Machlif, Rashi points out over here, Machlif, Hainu Mekach. This is just another form of purchase. I mean, the truth is, at the end of the day, from a halachic perspective, it makes no difference if you exchange money for produce or if you exchange produce for produce. They're both an act of Mekach, of purchasing. So the Gemara says, Hamachlif peros im chavero, zelachov, zelachov. So whether we're exchanging it to eat, right? I'm giving him apples, he's giving me oranges, both of us to eat. Or what? Or zeliktos for zeliktos. Or we're both buying it to dry out, right? Meaning we're both buying produce to spread out and dry. Or zelechov zeliktos. Or again, this I'm buying it to eat, he's buying it to dry out. We don't care what everybody's buying it for. Chayiv. I will say this opinion in this Mishnah holds that essentially what? Mekach is koveya. Mekach is koveya. That the act of selling an item, whether it's a sell for money or a sell by barter, that establishes that what? The produce is fully processed, fully finished, and therefore again, would be chayiv in fotrumos and maestros. Rabbi Huda says, le'echo chayiv liktos pater. No, if you're exchanging it for consumption purposes, then lemaisa again, you would be chayiv. But if they're just exchanging it and each one is going to spread out the produce to dry out, that clearly indicates that it's not fully processed. And therefore, halacha lemaisa, you don't. Therefore, it's not considered to be a kavios. So, what's the Gemara saying? We reject these ideas because we say what? We say mekach eino kaveya, that the act of selling an item, be it again for money or be it a barter, does not establish the item as being fully processed, fully finished, and therefore does not automatically generate the obligation for tithing. Hadron halach hamevi. New parak. Mashilin peros derech erubas. So, we'll say new topic. You can lower your produce by weight, or we'll say Aruba literally is a skylight. You can lower, now again, remember, understand, in times of the Mishnah, times of the Gemara later on, people had flat roofs. Now this is important because your rooftop was another area of usage for your activities. And very often what did people do on their rooftops? They spread out their fruit, they spread out their produce to dry out. So listen to this case. The case over here is, I've spread out my produce on my rooftop, let's say Erev Yom Tov, and now what's going to happen? It's starting to rain. And I will say, depending on the produce, it could ruin the produce if it rains. Now, I understand that, especially in Eretz Yisrael, so remember, again, you'd be going ahead and spreading out the produce, let's say really during the summer seasons, to go ahead and dry out. The notion of rain, obviously, is very uncommon. Highly uncommon. So what happens? So now, but I'm worried about my food. So what can I do? Says the Mishnah. I could lower the fruit down into my house through my skylight. Essentially, I could lower it, maybe it's too high. I could push it through the skylight. I can push it through the skylight and allow it to go ahead and land in my house. Rashi says over here, Mashilin Peros Derech Aruba, says Rashi, Mishi Yeshlo Chitin, someone has wheat on his rooftop, Usa Orin and barley, Shtuchin Al Gagoli His Yabish. And he's spreading it on his rooftop to go ahead and dry out. The Ra'ag Yishamim Mimash Mishin and Uz and Bain. And what happens? And he sees it's about to rain. Hitirolo Litrach with a Hashlich Derech Aruba Shebegag. They allowed him. Now we'll say what's involved over here. Now what's the dispensation? Dispensation is this involves Tircha. And as we've seen already, we try to avoid issues of Tircha on Shabbos and Yom Tov, excessive exertion. But nevertheless, the rabbis allowed you to do this. Deleka Tircha Yisera. Because the truth is, this was not such a great exertion. Why? Because the reality is, gravity does most of the work over here. Because all I need to do is get it over to the skylight. And again, it falls into the house and gravity does the rest. Deleka Tircha Yisera. V'davka Aruba. T'chol Aruba Mila Malu Lemata. And we'll say, and again, it's Davka skylight. Why? Because the skylight doesn't involve as much as such, because we just said gravity is doing most of the work, because you're taking it from the roof and it's going to fall into the house. So he betikra sagag, aval cholon kigon, gag shemukav mechitos, the cholon bekol sotarach lagbio ada cholon, will actually cholo trachini kitla kamar. We will see, Rashi gives a sneak preview over here. But let's say, again, if I have a rooftop, and the rooftop is surrounded, let's say, by a wall, and there are windows in the wall, I would not be permitted to scoop up the produce, put it in the window in order to save it from being ruined, because that is tircha yesera. What Chazal are allowing me to do is essentially to gather the produce and to dump it down the skylight. Avalo b'Shabbos. So back to the Mishnah. So the Mishnah says you can do this on Yom Tov, but you may not do this on Shabbos. Furthermore, u'mechasim peros b'kelim. Let's say I have fruit that's on the rooftop and it's starting to rain. I can go ahead and cover the fruit with kelim, with literally utensils. Whether utensils means utensil, whether utensil means a cloth. The idea is I could cover the fruit, I could cover the produce to make sure it doesn't get ruined. Rashi says over here, although I'm reading on Torah Shalotzorach Yom Tovu, the Shari Rabbanim Mishum Hefsid Mamo. And I will say, now obviously the only reason I'm doing this is to save myself a loss. Nevertheless, the rabbis permitted you to do this in order to avoid a financial loss. Similarly, Mipnei Hadlaf, Mechasin Peros Bekil Mipnei Hadlaf. So we'll say, let's say if I have water leaking onto my roof, Dlaf is a drip. If I have water leaking onto my roof, I don't want it to ruin the fruit. I can cover up the fruit. And even though, again, I'm not using this fruit on Yom Tov, I'm only doing this to save myself from a financial loss, I'm permitted to do it. Same idea. If I have barrels of oil, barrels of wine, and again, there's water dripping onto it, I can go ahead and cover the barrels in order to save myself from a loss. And I will say, furthermore, there's another interesting case. Let's say I have a leak in my roof. I have a leak in the roof of my house. It's leaking into my dining room. I could put a bucket underneath the leak in the roof to go ahead and catch the water. Obviously, we'll discuss all the novelties in this ruling. Says the Gemara. Itmar. I will say now, the Gemara is just going to spend a little bit of time speaking about the syntax of the Mishnah. Itmar, Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Nosson. So Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Nosson, the Tani, Chad Tani Mashilin, the Chad Tani Mashchilin. So I will say, the way that our Mishnah read, was mashilin. Mashilin means to lower. So it comes along another machlokas. Now, one opinion, Rabbi Huda says the lashon of the Mishnah is mashilin, whereas Rab Nosson said the lashon is mashchilin. Amar Mazutra, man detani mashilin mishtabish, or man detani mashchilin mishtabish. So it comes along, Mazutra says, good news, no one's wrong, right? Everyone's right. The one who said mashilin is right, the one who said mashchilin is right, because both of them mean the shonos of what? Of lowering. So the Gemara says, "Man, the Tani Mashilin leMishtabish." The one who says Mashilin was not wrong. Why? Because what does the Ki Dichsiv? Because the pasuk says, "Ki." He's actually quoting over here the pasuk from Devarim. Ki Yishal Zeisecha. So I will say, Ki Yishal Zeisecha literally means the time will come when the olive will throw down, the tree will throw down its fruit. So Lashon Mashilin means to throw down. Man, the Tani Mashilin leMishtabish. And the one who says Mashilin also is not making a mistake, because again, what does Mashilin mean? This nan hashachol v'hakosel. So we'll say over here, the Mishnah is talking about animals that are blemished and may not be brought as karbanos. So what are the examples of the blemish that the Gemara brings? So the Gemara says hashachol v'hakosel, shachol shenishmita yirecho. So we'll say shachol is an animal whose hip has been dislocated. So dislocated, the Gemara simply means it was moved down. So you see over here that mashchilin is a lashon of lowering. Kassel she'echamira kosav gava mechaberta. Kassel means one of the hips is higher than the other. Amar Rav Nachman bar Yitzchok, man detani mashirin. Lo mishtabish. So again, I'll say there were additional versions of the Mishnah. So Rav Nachman says there was someone who said mashirin, and he's also not wrong. Or man detani mashchirin lo mishtabish. There's another guy who said the Mishnah should read mashnakai. Another opinion who said mashchirin, right? And he's also not wrong. Oh man, the tani manshirin lo mishtabish, and the one who said manshirin is also not wrong. Oh man, the tani mashirin lo mishtabish. So I'm also now that we're going to go through each of them. So the Gemara says man, the tani mashirin lo mishtabish. The one who said that you should read the opening word of the Mishnah as mashirin is not wrong. Why? This line, Rabbi Shimon Rishmael says, Nazir lo yachov rosho ba'adama. A nazir should not rub his head. Should not rub his head with certain dirt. Why? Mipnei shemesha as asar, seyar. Because both say there's certain types of dirt. It's like a type of like depilatory dirt that causes hair to come out. So you see over here the lashon of meshir, mashirin, mit a lashon of what? Falling out and down. Man detani mashchirin lo mishtabish. The one who said the Mishnah should use the word mashchirin is also not wrong. Why? This none. Hashachar v'hazug shal saporim. Both say so. A shachar is a razor. And zug are scissors of a barber. So a razor and a scissor of barbers. Even though their parts have been separated, tumein. Maybe we'll say, without getting into this, a kli is only mekabel tuma if it functions as a kli. The chiddush over here is that the barber's razor and the barber's scissor, even when the parts come apart, the individual parts are still usable as kelim. Also, therefore, they're mekabel tuma. We'll say, why does this matter for us? Because you see over here, what's the name for a razor? The name of a razor is a shachar. So we'll say a razor does what? It cuts off hair and it falls to the ground. Therefore, the verb mashchirin causes something, means what? Causes something to fall down. Okay? Oman the tani manshirin. And the one reason Rishna has manshirin, also the mishtabish, is also not mistaken. Why? Because what does he say? I'm sorry, it's lost the place. Man tani manshirin, lo mishtabish, this none. Mishenashru kelo b'mayir. We'll say the case over here is someone's garments fell into water on Shabbos. But I will say what this really means over here, what the real case is, a person's clothing gets wet on Shabbos. But the way that the Mishnah phrases it is, someone's clothing fell into water on Shabbos. What's the halacha? Mehalich pan ve'ino choshish. Shabbos say you could wear wet clothing on Shabbos, and we're not concerned that people will suspect you of what? That people will suspect you of laundering. I mean, people might suspect you of laundering, but at least it's not going to be of that. Hey, so the idea over here is that you go, so you see over here that what? That the lashon of nashru is lashon of falling. Okay. Inami mihad is not ezehu leket, or you can prove it for you also. What is the din of leket? Hanosher bishas katsira. That which falls down at the time of harvest. So we'll say the idea over here is what? That you see many different opinions used many different words, but all of those words conveyed the same basic idea that ultimately, again, on Yom Tov, you are permitted to go ahead and push the produce through the wind, through the skylight, causing it to fall down into the house. Says the Gemara. Tnan, mashilin peiros derech aruba b'yom tov ad kamo. So what's the Gemara? It's an interesting question. Our Mishnah said that you're permitted to push the produce off the roof through the skylight. How much? Meaning, is there a cap as to how much produce you are permitted to go ahead and push through the skylight? So the Gemara says, Amr Abzira, Amr Abasi, Va'amrili Amr Abasi, Amr Abyochman, Ke'osa Sheshaninu. Well, maybe we have a precedent. We've learned this before. What did we learn before? So first of all, look at Rashi just a moment. Ad kama yehei bahen delo aminan tircha yiseiri. Now, we'll say, obviously, this entire license of pushing the fruit through the skylight is predicated on the idea that this is not an act of tircha yiseira, not an act of excessive exertion. At some point in time, it has to become labeled as tircha yiseira, or maybe not, but is there a cap? Meaning, is there a certain amount of produce that you can get away with pushing through the produce through the skylight, and it's not called tircha yiseira, but at a certain point in time, it does become called tircha yiseira. So someone says, oh, well, look at this case. What does the Braisa say? Mifanin arba v'chamish kupo shal teven v'shal tuam ne'orfin u'mipnei bitl beis ha-medrash. So both say, now the halacha is that you're permitted to go ahead and move aside four or five kupos. Kupos means baskets or boxes of straw or of wheat. Mipnei arachim. Both say, let's say I'm having company, and it turns out that I have some straw or some wheat left in my dining room, and now I realize more company than I expected came. I need to clear away the area. I'm permitted to go ahead and clear away the area for the sake of my arachim, for the sake of my guests. Similarly, umipnei bittel beis hamedrash, or Baruch Hashem, we need more room in the beis medrash. We need more room in the beis medrash. Therefore, again, I'm permitted to go out and clear away four or five boxes of straw to make room in the beis medrash. So both sides. But the Gemara is suggesting over here is she have a brisa that's talking about over here a situation where lemaisa I need the space and it's capping my exertion at what? Four or five boxes. So maybe that's the same. Maybe that's the same cap by the case of the flute on the roof as well. I'm permitted to go ahead and clear away, but up to four or five boxes worth of produce. To which the Gemara says, "Well, one second. The Dilma Shiny Hassan. Maybe that case is different. Meaning the case that we just quoted is different. Why? The Ika Beetle based on Edrish. Because they're both saying over here there's a compelling factor." There's a compelling factor that causes me to have to move the straw or the wheat, which is what? Otherwise, people won't be able to learn. Look at Rashi. For Dilma, Hasam hu disharinan kulehai. Maybe it's only in this particular case where we allow him such exertion of moving four or five boxes. The ika bikel bitel beis hamedrash v'hu adin lekavod orchim avam mishum hefsid mamon lo shor rabbanu kulehai. So also remember, just so you understand, in the context of the Gemara, four or five boxes is a lot. That's a lot of produce. It's a lot of produce. The Gemara is suggesting maybe the only reason the rabbis allowed you to move four or five boxes of produce was because it was a compelling reason. Like you can't have people for the Suda or a Bittel Beis HaMedrash. But if it's just a question of a financial loss, maybe again you can't move it at all. Now obviously we know that Havamina can't be true because the Mishnah allows you to do it. But the Gemara goes on. The Gemara says, furthermore, Inami, Hasam Hainu Taima. Hasam dika bitul beis medrash avahalcha deleka bitul beis medrash lo inam. You know the possibilities. Hasam haynu taima the arba v'chamish kupos shari mishum shabbos. Did we not both say to understand that case of moving the four or five boxes of straw of wheat was actually a case by Shabbos? So maybe the license to move four or five boxes of straw is on Shabbos. Why? Now says this is the opposite way we normally think. Dichamira below asi lezalzulebe. The Rabbi said, the rabbis gave me this license to move a significant amount of produce. Why? Because Shabbos is Chomer. People treat Shabbos in a Chomer in a strict fashion. And we're not concerned that if we allow you to move four or five boxes of produce, that what may happen? You may come to treat Shabbos leniently. So we see this in other areas of halacha also. Because Shabbos is, it sounds strange, it's a little counterintuitive, but because Shabbos is so Chomer, we allow you a certain amount of latitude in doing certain things because we are not concerned that if we give you an inch, you're going to take a foot. So maybe on Shabbos is when we allow you to move four or five boxes of produce. Again, for the sake of Orchim, of guests, or for the sake of Bittul Beis HaMedrash, and we're not concerned that if we allow you to move four or five boxes, you're going to come to engage in additional tircha. Aval Yom Tiv, Dikil, but Yom Tov already is more Mekil. Va'asi l'zalzulebe, by Yom Tov there is a fear that what? That if we give you an inch, what's going to happen? You're going to take a foot. You're going to end up being mezalzal Yom Tov. Maybe klal lo. Maybe you shouldn't be able to go ahead and do anything on Yom Tov. Meaning, again, especially we're only dealing with the case of hefsid mamon. That most that's at risk over here is monetary loss. Maybe we shouldn't allow you to do anything. Inami, another possibility. The idachis, or perhaps we could reverse the argument. Hasam haynu taima deleka hefsid mamon. The reason why you are capped at four or five boxes for moving on Shabbos was why? Because there's no financial loss, right? What's the issue in the Shabbos case? The issue is I need a little bit more room for my company. I need a little bit more room for the Talmidim in the basement. So fine, so Chazal said we're going to cap it at four or five boxes. Okay, you'll get the job done at four or five boxes. Aval hocha de'ika hefsid mamon. But over here, by the case of the Mishnah, we're going to both say, what happens if it rains? If it rains, what's going to happen? Financials, and it could be a significant financial loss. Afilo tuvanami. Maybe what? Maybe lemaisa, the four or five box cap that was stated by Shabbos, does not apply by Yom Tov. All right, we're going to stop over here. I'm leaving you on a cliffhanger. So just again, just remember where we're leaving off. So we're leaving off with this kasha. The Gemara is trying to figure out over here, lemaisa again, what is the amount? What is the amount that you would be permitted? Or is there a cap? Is there a limited amount with which one again could lower through the skylight in order to save from the hefsid mamon, the hefsid merubah? And now again, right now the Gemara is not clear. All we know is we have a similar case in Shabbos. Shabbos, it's capped at four or five boxes of wheat, or ultimately of wheat and what was the other thing? Of wheat and straw. So the shayla is Shabbos there to serve as the precedent, Or do we perhaps say, no, maybe Shabbos is limited at this, but perhaps Yom Tov has a much more expansive hatter because it has Simurubah. To be continued tomorrow in your session.
Two questions.